We've already had fires in the hundreds of acres east and west of the Cascades, near Chiloquin and near Butte Falls. In California, this is Fire Preparedness Week. Everywhere around the region, there's a heightened attention to the destructive capability of fires based on recent seasons. There's much to talk about from several angles. Terry Eubanks is the Community Preparedness Coordinator for the City of Ashland in the studio with me. Terry, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
By phone, we have Jeff Smith, who is the External Communications Manager for PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric. Jeff, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Mark McKinnon is with us as well. He's a survivor of the campfire last year in Paradise, California. Mark, welcome to you.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody.
So, Terry, I want to start with you because there's a very up-to-date thing coming out of your employer, which is the City of Ashland, about open burning. There was a ban yesterday?
We have suspended open burning moving forward unless conditions change. We have contacted all of those who have open burn permits and told them we've suspended it for now. The weather just doesn't seem to be giving us any inclination that we're going to be able to allow that again, but it's potentially possible if we get some rain.
Is this unusually early for an open burning ban in Ashland?
It's unusually early. It's not unheard of. Again, I think you just mentioned the normals are definitely not normal, so the averages are definitely changing, and I can see fire season fast approaching. It seems like it's been earlier and earlier every year, so maybe May.
Maybe May instead of June. We've been talking about June 1st as a potential start to fire season. Okay, we have much more to talk about preparedness matters. I want to talk to Mark McKinnon about what you've been through. Where have you been living, first of all, since the campfire?
Well, we were really lucky, if there was any luck involved, in that we were able to move down the mountain when we were evacuated. And within 2 days before the real estate feeding frenzy kicked in, we were able to purchase a home that we had actually looked at prior to the fire. My wife and I had lived in Paradise since 1986, and we had gotten to the point where we were very afraid of a fire. And so we'd been looking during the summer and the early fall, not realizing that it was going to be the fire, not a fire. And, of course, it just came so fast and deleted everything. But we landed on our feet, and now we're Valley people. And we're just really happy to be able to have a home, because so many of our friends and community associates and acquaintances are still, they're just scattered like somebody blew on a dry dandelion. And they're looking for a home. They're all refugees.
That's a really interesting term you use there, deleted. It sounds a little brusque at first, but it's really what happened. I mean, people lost a lot of history and in some cases their lives, obviously, in Paradise. I understand for you it was a very close call.
It was an extremely close call. Our story is very harrowing. And at the same time, there are countless others that are equally as harrowing and even more so than ours. But it's odd because my wife actually woke up at 4:30 in the morning before the fire had even started, and she was in a panic and wanted to wake me up and tell me we need to get out now. And then she thought she was being a little foolish, and I would think so, but she didn't realize I'd been awake almost all night listening to what I call a banshee wind just howling. And when I woke up around 7 in the morning and looked at the sky, I went, oh, my God, because it was just pure orange and red, and I knew that hell was upon us. And when we eventually grabbed a couple of things and we got in our cars, I talked Wendy. It could have been a grave, tragic mistake, and almost was. I talked Wendy into driving her car ahead of me, and I said, I'll be right with you the whole time. We had no idea that when we were trying to escape one fire, we were actually driving into the teeth of another inferno that was at the exit of Paradise to get to safety. And she drove into the fire and disappeared into just pure black and red. And I thought, oh, my God, I've lost her. And then what was really heartbreaking, and it's part of the song that I wrote that I forwarded an email this morning to you and sent the MP3 of it. You could play it, you know, later for somebody.
Well, we'll see if we can get it. It's called Just Breathe, though. I did listen to it yesterday, yeah.
It's Just Breathe, and it hinges on the moment when, after she disappeared, she actually called me on the phone and said, "I don't know if I'm going to see you again. I just need to tell you that I love you." And, of course, you know, I just almost fell apart right there at the moment, and I just said, "Please, just try to watch the road and don't look at the fire and just breathe." And we made it through. But oddly enough, the first signs of PTSD showed up as soon as we got through into the blue, and we didn't recognize the road we were on that we'd driven so many years. And we were thinking, what road is this? And where are we going? And it was a very strange experience. And that's part of the story, too, is the recovery and the therapy that I went through. Because when the symptoms started kicking in, I got a really profound sense of empathy for people who suffer through trauma and grief and the success of the therapy that I went through is I think maybe even a more important story that I try to share with people so that they too can find a road back to healing.
Much more to talk about. Mark McKinnon is a survivor of the Camp Fire. Jeff Smith is with PG&E and External Communications. The External Communications Manager will be talking about PG&E's efforts to avoid repeats of bad fires in recent years. Terry Eubanks is Community Preparedness Coordinator for the City of Ashland. We will talk to all of them, and if you'd like to join us, we'll take phone calls and emails from you when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 30. On the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are talking about wildfire preparedness because we've had a couple of fires already. We already have an open burning ban in the city of Ashland, and other efforts are coming to the fore to indicate that we are in for another fire season and in the very near future. So a couple of people to talk to about this. Terry Eubanks, Community Preparedness Coordinator for the City of Ashland, is in the studio with me. PG&E spokesperson Jeff Smith is on the line. He's the External Communications Manager to talk about PG&E's efforts to take part with other utilities in wildfire preparedness. We also have Mark McKinnon, a survivor of the Camp Fire that destroyed most of Paradise, California last fall, on the line with us as well. You can join the conversation on the Exchange, 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Jeff Smith, I'd like to turn to you at PG&E, because PG&E has certainly become a focus for attention in wildfires in recent years, with equipment blamed for starting some of the fires. Would you talk first about the safety plan presented to the California Public Utilities Commission and some of the major components of that?
Sure. Well, in response to, you know, what we're seeing, which is really a rapidly changing environmental conditions in the state of California, as an additional precautionary measure following the 2017 and 2018 wildfires, we're enhancing and expanding our, what we call our community wildfire safety program, to further reduce wildfire risks and help keep customers and the communities that we serve as safe as possible. And, you know, it's been made overwhelmingly clear to us that more must be done to adapt and to address the threat of wildfires and the extreme weather with greater urgency. And so, you know, we've been doing a lot of things, which include real-time monitoring and intelligence capabilities and new and enhanced safety measures, as well as hardening our electric system. And part of that, the commitment to safety, is we're expanding and accelerating our wildfire safety measures to do all that's possible to keep our customers and our communities and in our state safe. And so, some of those efforts include further enhancing vegetation management around power lines, conducting safety inspections of our electric infrastructure in high fire threat areas, and, again, as I mentioned before, hardening our electric system.
You know, I come back to Mark McKinnon talking about the banshee wind he heard howling on the morning of the campfire on the day that that he and his wife got burned out of their house. And I just wonder, I mean, do you build power infrastructure to withstand certain kinds of events? And are those limits being exceeded by what nature is providing to you now? Jeff Smith? Did we lose Jeff Smith? Mark McKinnon.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm here. Yeah. Sorry about that. I had bumped my mute button.
Oh, okay.
One thing that we have noticed is that, customers in higher threat areas where they're more likely to be affected by some of these instances that we're seeing, just in terms of the change in climate. And so that's why we're trying to take these steps to make these adjustments to how some of these things are managed, because we know that with the changing conditions that we're seeing in the state, in our state specifically, with climate change and other matters, that the approach that we need to take in order to prevent some of these fires needs to change as well. And so that's why we've got both our community wildfire safety plan as well as the public safety power shutoff program, which has been introduced this week, which was introduced last year, but is going to be greatly expanded during this next fire season.
Is this what's being called the Power of Being Prepared campaign?
The statewide campaign is called the Power of Being Prepared. We refer to it as the public safety power shutoff, and really what that is it's an additional precautionary measure where we will in some instances need to turn off power lines in the interest of safety in order to help reduce the likelihood of an ignition when extreme fire dangers conditions are forecast.
Has there been a consistent ignition source fire to fire, whether it's power lines sagging to the ground in the heat or slapping each other or coming disconnected in wind? I mean, is it a consistent sort of thing?
It's every situation's unique. And so, that's why when we look at these public safety power shutoffs, we have to look at a combination of criteria to be considered in terms of when we would call one. It's largely weather dependent. But the conditions that in terms of interacting with the weather and our equipment, et cetera, they're unique and different in every case. And so it's really going to be a case by case basis that we're evaluating.
Okay. I got more questions for later on for the Power of Being Prepared campaign. I want to turn to Terry Eubanks, interesting situation in the city of Ashland where you're the preparedness coordinator, and that the city also owns the electric utility. And I wonder if there's any discussion or has been already some planning about what to do about power sources when you have extreme fire conditions.
I learned a lot about our power sources. Recently, we had an emergency operations center training, and our department heads or directors from Public Works were invited, and we talked pretty consistently about how we can best serve the community. And we feel as though the community is in a pretty good shape, and we have lots of public and education outreach programs. But it was interesting to talk about shutting off water and turning on the TID and what that looks like, and also just what a power outage in Ashland can impact, how it can impact the residents. We recently had a natural gas outage. And so just what does that look like for us? And so internally, we're working pretty diligently on preparing ourselves for something that may look or appear to be similar to Paradise, although we don't anticipate something to that impact here.
But the city is now in a wildfire hazard zone. The whole city is within that zone now, is that right?
That's correct. We are changing municipal code and changing the way that we construct both buildings but also plants. When we are putting in new plants in new residents, we've omitted certain types of vegetation from being planted on the forefront. We're trying to get folks who have those already to eradicate them as well, to just lessen that impact for that spread of wildfire.
So you're talking about new construction, it sounds like, and some encouragement for people to get rid of it, but there's no requirement for people to take out certain types of vegetation. If they have junipers in their front yard, you're not going to say, get that out of here, at least at this point.
Not at this point. That's correct.
Might that come later?
Potentially. We'll see how it goes.
Let's talk about one of your primary duties, which is to lead the CERT, or Community Emergency Response Team. Mm-hmm. And how long has the CERT exists because of a prior emergency in Ashland, doesn't it?
Actually, yes, it does. There was a flood of 1997. And so at that point, 2 years later, the CERT team, which is a national program, was coordinated here. We currently have about 220-plus volunteers who have some basic training. We call it basic training, basic fire suppression, basic medical operations, urban search and rescue, who are willing and capable of coming out and assisting during a big event. And that could be any type of natural disaster. That could be wildfire, it could be flood, earthquake, etc.
How many times has CERT mobilized over the years?
You know, a few dozen, so over 30. We recently did a couple of sandbags for a resident outside of the city of Ashland who had some flooding, localized flooding in his yard, and he thought it was maybe due to snow melt, but we put together about 30 sandbags for him.
And how often is the training going on? I mean, how often do you get into exercises with the 220-plus volunteers to make sure they're all still crisp and sharp and ready?
Consistently. So we have our basic training for initiating new volunteers only twice annually, but we have monthly ongoing training, two evenings as well as one weekend every month.
We are talking about wildfire preparedness here on the Jefferson Exchange because, as we have seen demonstrated by a couple of 100-acre-plus wildfires on the Oregon side, east and west of the Cascades, there is fire activity mounting already. The city of Ashland put an open burning ban into effect as of yesterday. It is Wildfire Preparedness Week in California with an event coming up at the Redding Airport on Thursday at 11:30. And you can join our conversation on the exchange with Terry Eubanks, Community Preparedness Coordinator for the City of Ashland, Jeff Smith, a spokesperson for Pacific Gas and Electric, and Mark McKinnon, a survivor of the Camp Fire. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I'll take a phone call here from Rika in Grants Pass. Welcome to the exchange.
Well, good morning, Jeff.
Hi.
Paradise water rates are 525 per 1,000 gallon units.
Mm-hmm.
And that is for every gallon, not the highest rate. Santa Rosa, 650 per 1,000 gallons. That is the highest rate there. They have tiered rates. Now, Redding, they were $1.42 when the fire hit there. But that was every unit.
Mm-hmm.
High water rates that are priced to save water and not sell it is drying out California and Oregon and causing cities to burn.
But in a drought, Rika, you can't use unlimited amounts of water, obviously.
We don't get water from the Pacific during the summer here in inland across the Coast Range.
Right, precipitation doesn't come in off the Pacific in the summer, right? But still,
that,
I mean,
the thing is, we used to have all kinds of water in the summer. When I lived here in the 80s, when water was cheap and used like it's cheap, we had rain nearly every weekend of the summer. And then when we cut off water because, well, we had a drought, we were low on snowpack. We cut off watering lawns and washing cars, we had 100 days without rain that summer.
So you're saying it takes water to make water?
That's right. It's like money. If you don't keep it moving, it doesn't circulate.
All right, Rika, thanks for that perspective. Appreciate that. Let me direct that to you, Mark McKinnon. The price you was talking about, 525 per 1,000 gallons in Paradise, were you thinking much about how much water cost before the fire hit?
I personally wasn't. I know that some were. What we were more concerned was wise use of water, because not everybody has unlimited access to water. We were living up on a ridge, and we were very reliant upon snowpack melt off to fill the reservoir that the town got its water from, and that was, you know, a fairly limited amount of water, and so we used it as best as we could with you know, wise drip systems and watering periods, etc. You know, of course, somebody's always going to complain about the price of water, but we're at this place where in your early weather forecast, you talked about you don't want to say normal anymore. And I've been calling this time that we're living in the new abnormal, because all bets are off. And one of the biggest bets about the incredible climate change that's happened is from the time I was a little boy living up there in the mountains during the summers, I watched the snow level rise at least several hundred feet to where there used to be a lot of snow in certain areas of Paradise, and there was barely ever any snow ever again. And that's happening all up and down, not only the West Coast, but it's happening all over the planet, as you well know. So we need to be wise about our water and expect that when you have a limited resource, you might have to pay more than you feel comfortable about.
I want to come back to what you were saying earlier about your suspicions that something like this might happen at some point. I mean, you guys had moved already or had bought a piece of property when the fire hit Paradise and drove you and your wife.
Two days after.
And just to restate for the folks that might not have heard that part of the conversation, was it because of concern about wildfire?
Most definitely. We had had close calls before in Paradise where certain areas had been burned out, but they'd been able to be contained. And back in those previous times, the worst one was about 10 years ago, the news would be, oh my God, did you hear so-and-so lost their home? And then it flipped to the other extreme where we would say, wow, did you hear so-and-so didn't lose their home? Because about 90% of structures were gone. And so because of the evacuation, where people would actually come and pound on your door saying, get out now, we knew it was coming again just because the fire season is no longer starting in June and ending in October. It's generally, it could happen any of the 12 months out of the year. So we were afraid, and I had said to Wendy, getting to the planning idea of fire safety, one evening we were sitting on our deck, and we had a gorgeous piece of property with lots of redwoods and trees everywhere, and I said, unfortunately, this is not a defensible space. You know, we could rake pine needles till kingdom come. That wouldn't have made any difference. And it was true. It wasn't defensible. And so in the future, for planning of communities, it might mean thinning out the amount of trees and shrubbery, et cetera, for properties. I hate to see that happen because we need as much CO2 as we can, not CO2, but oxygen as we can get in for the environment. So it's a kind of in a rock and a hard place here.
Well, you know, I do remember telling people that my own exposure to Paradise on my one trip through there was that it was a lovely place nestled in the trees. And I thought, well, nestled in the trees could potentially be part of the problem. And it was.
And it was.
So let's talk about defensible space, Terry Eubanks. You're up. What do people have to do when they're trying to make their homes a little more resilient and resistant to wildfire?
Oh, we'd like you to have 30 feet around your home cleared, essentially. That's difficult in these urban environments, so not stacking any of your wood up against your home, trying to harden around your home. And that just means removing mulch that's up against the home. I know it looks lovely in landscaping, but there are alternatives. We also have a list of landscapers who have gone through a FireWise-type training course through our department. And they could come out and give some suggestions. The water water conservation team put together a website. So there's both water conservation plants and plants that are also fire adaptive or fire resistant. So we have a combination of that on the website for folks to take a look at, limbing back small or low branches, just really keeping the debris around your yard cleaned up. We recently had a FireWise debris cleanup day that was May 4th, and our forestry division is in conversation with Recology to hopefully bring that a free day back in June.
Piles of pine needles in particular, which are starting to develop on my property. I got a reminder from Joy this morning about that. Should they just be eliminated? Should we just get rid of the pine needles?
Sure. Take them to Recology and they will mulch them down and recycle them and they could turn them into soil.
How different does a yard planted with FireWise landscaping look from one that is not?
It doesn't look any different. It just has a different type of vegetation growing.
All right, so the plants are not going to be the same, so you have those differences, but otherwise
sure.
It's you can still
sure.
have a yard.
Otherwise, there are lovely plants.
Much more to talk about as we talk about wildfire preparedness. This is Wildfire Preparedness Week in California. Mark McKinnon is a survivor of the Camp Fire in Paradise. We'll get to his song. We have that loaded up. Thanks for that, Mark. PG&E spokesman Jeff Smith is with us as well to talk about PG&E's role in changing behavior in future fire seasons. Terry Eubanks is Community Preparedness Coordinator for the City of Ashland and the leader of the Community Emergency Response Team, or CERT. You can join the conversation on the exchange, 800-838-3760, 800-838-3760. Email address jx@jeffnet.org. Back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 30. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are talking about wildfire preparedness because fire season is clearly getting close to being upon us. There is a fire weather watch for Klamath County north of Chiloquin for Thursday afternoon. Not in effect yet, but there's already been a fire in the Chiloquin area of several hundred acres and a fire in the Butte Falls area of several hundred acres and a couple of grass fires here and there, including what appears to be a cigarette butt-caused fire on Interstate 5 between Phoenix and Medford just yesterday. So it's definitely time to talk about wildfire preparedness. This is Wildfire Preparedness Week in California with an event at the Redding Airport on Thursday at 11:30. As our guests, we have Terry Eubanks, Community Preparedness Coordinator for the City of Ashland, Jeff Smith, the External Communications Manager for PG&E, which is involved in efforts to curtail future fires, and Mark McKinnon, a survivor of the Camp Fire in Paradise. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Jeff Smith, a question from a listener directly to you. It says, I heard a radio announcement on this station the morning of the Camp Fire alerting Northern California residents that PGE might be shutting off the power that day. The power was not shut off, but the fire had already devastated Paradise. What happened? Why was it not shut off? That again from Chris in Ashland.
No, and I certainly appreciate the question. You know, a lot goes into making a determination on a public safety power shutoff. We always look at various scenarios. And one of the things that we are doing looking forward is we want to make sure that, well, we only turn off the lines in the interest of safety when it's absolutely necessary, because we know how much our customers rely on power. However, we also want to make sure that when conditions are such that things are extremely dangerous, that we do take that step. And so, you know, we understand that, we certainly understand that concern. And what we do is our Wildfire Safety Operations Center monitors fire danger conditions across our service territory, and we evaluate whether or not to turn off the power line. No single factor drives that. There's a lot of things that go into it. And as I mentioned before, every situation is unique. Some of the criteria include a red flag warning declared by the National Weather Service, low humidity levels, forecast sustained winds that's generally above 25 miles per hour or gusts in excess of 45 miles per hour. And again, that also, there's other factors involved in that as well, because it depends upon the location and the site-specific conditions, the conditions of dry soil, how dry the ground is, and then just real on-the-ground observations from PG&E's Wildfire Safety Observation Center, as well as field crews that are out there examining all of this. And so there's a lot that goes into it, and there's no single factor, and each situation is unique.
So it sounds like you have a bit of a matrix here, though. Dry fuel, winds up to a certain speed, et cetera, that when, you know, when the checklist is met, that's when the decision is made to shut the power off?
Correct. And the most likely electric lines to be considered for shutting off for safety are those that pass through areas that have been designated by the California Public Utilities Commission as elevated or which is tier two, or extreme risk tier three for wildfire. And so, that goes into the matrix as well. And then there are, when we look at that, there's customers that, for example, that are in high fire threat areas, are more likely to be affected because the energy system relies on distribution and transmission power lines working together to provide electricity across cities. But what we are telling folks, and this is something that a real message that we would like to get across to your listeners, is to, if they are a PG&E customer, to please go to our website at pge.com and update your contact information, because that's how we will be able to reach out to our customers in advance of a public safety power shutoff event and try and warn them that this is something that's under consideration, to make sure that they are prepared. That's really the biggest change in the program from last year to this year. Whereas last year it was really primarily customers that lived in those tier two and tier three areas that could potentially be affected by a public safety power shutoff. Now it's really all 5 million PG&E customers have the potential, because of the way these transmission and distribution lines work together, to be impacted. And there are certainly areas that are more likely, but we want all of our, you know, we have developed a plan, and we want to encourage our customers to have a plan as well, so that they know, should we be faced with a situation where we do have to turn off their power in the interest of public safety, that they know exactly what they're going to do, that they have a plan, that they can execute an emergency preparedness plan, that they can execute in their own personal lives. And we're encouraging all of our customers to do that, as well as to get in touch with us and update their contact information with us, so we can make sure that we get in touch with them when we are looking at potentially having a public safety power shutoff in their area.
I imagine you've been over this internally and with the PUC, but is there some concern that essential services needed in firefighting and evacuation might be lost because the power's out?
You know, we know exactly how much our customers rely on electric service, and there are safety risks on both sides, and that's something that we recognize. We understand and appreciate that turning off the power affects first responders and the operation of critical facilities, communication systems, and much, much more. So we certainly do understand that. We are committed to helping our customers and communities prepare for these possible safety events, precisely because we understand that that there really is a safety risk on both sides. But with the devastation that we've seen and the rapidly changing environmental conditions in our state, this is a precautionary measure that's absolutely necessary.
So you mentioned going to pge.com to update your contact info. Will they get a same sort of link if they go to the prepareforpowerdown.com site?
That will help connect them both to our site as well as to various statewide. The campaign that you mentioned is actually, it's a statewide campaign. So it's a joint campaign between all three of the investor-owned utilities in the state of California, in addition to PG&E, also Southern California Edison and San Diego Gas and Electric. And so if you go to that website, we'll actually direct you to the page for the utility that you are a customer of to update your contact information. So you can, it really ultimately gets you to the same place. It's just two different ways of arriving to the page where you can update your contact information.
Okay. As we talk further about the wildfire preparedness and obviously wildfires that have occurred, there's been a lot of talk, and I know we'll get the future segments as well, about evacuation policy, particularly in California. Mark McKinnon, did you have any idea what the plans were on the morning of the Paradise, the campfire, where you should go in getting out of Paradise?
There are very limited roads outside of Paradise. And so in the past, we've known if the fire was coming in from the east or the north or the west, which roads we would take. The problem with this one is that we didn't realize that there were about five fires that had broken out almost simultaneously because the wind had carried live embers many miles from the east. You know, and it was an odd situation because the wind rarely comes in from the east, but it was coming in like a hurricane. And so we thought we were driving to safety when actually we were driving to danger. But if we'd gone in another direction, we'd have gone to another source of danger. But we did have an evacuation plan. We did have all of our photos. We did have all of our key financial records in a box ready to go. And so we did have that going. But to get back to your last person who called in with a question or emailed a question, we had gotten a message on our phone from PG&E the night before, the evening before, that the high winds were very likely going to cause a power outage. They were going to turn off our power. So we were prepared for that, but that never happened. And, you know, listening to, you know, the PG&E perspective, it's just like another rock in a hard place. If you do turn it off, you lose certain things. I mean, even people who are reliant upon home medical oxygen and things like that, they lose out. So you lose, you win. And there was just, I don't think there was a perfect answer. But most of us were already prepared to go.
I want to talk to Terry Eubanks about evacuation where Ashland is concerned, because some of the situations that applied in Paradise apply in Ashland as well. There are limited ways out of town that don't take you past another hillside full of trees that could potentially be on fire. So how well developed is evacuation planning in Ashland, and how much refining, if any, has there been since, for example, the Paradise fire, the campfire?
Well, we have evacuation routes that are coming down from what we call above the boulevard, right? So we want to get them out onto the primary roads. And then it's really going to be situational. He mentioned situational awareness before, and really thinking about, well, what's happening? So do we have a fire to the east? Do we have a fire to the west? And are we telling folks that they can only make a right-hand turn, getting them out onto the highway, and then letting them disperse from there? We have our primary ways and methods to get in and out of town, but we also have secondary and tertiary streets. So for residents and folks who are full-time living here, they understand those other routes, and they're aware of them. It's going to be getting that message out to tourists and folks who are visiting the area. We do have an alert system as well. So the city of Ashland has the NICSL, where you text 97520 to 888-777 to receive those emergency alerts. And the county still has Citizen Alert. You know, you have to go online and create an account to receive those alerts. But essentially, we want folks to be able to get information from us first and foremost. They could turn into they could tune into 1700 AM in their car as they're driving. But I like what Mark said about having a plan. I go to so many different HOA meetings and do these public events, and I really see people thinking about this stuff. They're asking the right questions. They're more willing for feasibility purposes to go out and spend money and be prepared at home. So just being prepared and having that plan, having all your documents digitized and, you know, encrypt them, put them out on the cloud, but really taking the time and the forethought, because these things happen really fast. And so if you're more prepared, you're more resilient.
So have a plan of your own in addition to relying upon people to have evacuation plans and that sort of stuff in place. Mark McKinnon, we're going to go out with a song. We do have it now. Your song that you wrote about escaping from the campfire, Just Breathe. I mean, what was it like to get that off your chest and into musical form?
It was... I'm a professional musician, and it took me almost a month before I had the wherewithal or ability to even open up my guitar case of one of my guitars that I was able to save. And it usually takes me months to craft a song, and this one took me. My wife went to do her first yoga session after the fire. It was our first time we weren't with each other from after the catastrophe. I went over, picked up my guitar. I was by myself in a little cottage, and out of it came this song. So when she came back 2 hours later, the song was written. And I had a lot of really good friends go in and record it with me. It's rather long for airplay, but...
We've already dead rolled it to make sure we can get past the long intro.
Okay.
So we had a little taste of it yesterday. But thank you so much for providing it and for talking to us. Mark McKinnon, Survived the Campfire in Paradise.
I wish you all well.
Thank you. Jeff Smith, a spokesperson from PG&E, the External Communications Manager. Thank you for joining us to talk about PG&E's efforts.
And no problem. Thanks for having me.
Sure. And Terry Eubanks, the Community Preparedness Coordinator for the City of Ashland, thank you for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
We go out now to the sound of Mark McKinnon singing his song, Just Breathe, about escaping the paradise, the campfire in paradise last year. That'll do it for today's Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for listening. Have a good day.
Our paradise burned down to the ground. Heard trees explode like thunder in the air. On so many brave hearts and sweet dreams were shattered like the broken glass everywhere. Called me on the phone and said,
I need to tell you this just one more time.
Baby, I love you. Ooh, I love you.
I could.